Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Lech Lecha. This week, Neiman Novetzky discusses Lech Lecha. Neiman Novetzky is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Neiman Novetzky.
Thank you, Larry. Parshat Lech Lecha opens the patriarchal narratives, introducing us to our first forefather, Avraham. We meet him first at age 75 and aren't told anything about his early life or why he was chosen. Though Midrash attempts to fill in the gaps, Torah leads us to learn about Avraham's character and beliefs from the later stories which speak of him. Some of these are quite positive, presenting an Avraham of great belief, military prowess, and justice. But other stories don't present Avraham in the best of light. The same is true of our other Avot and Imahot. Sometimes we read stories and are quite impressed, but other times we read of their actions and we question, is this really the role model we hope for? So what do you do when you get to a story in which our ancestors' actions trouble us? In the next 15 minutes or so, I wanted to take one example, the story of Avraham in Egypt, and use it as a test case to see both how commentators have approached this particular story and how one might address the issue as a whole. So the story opens in Bereishit 12. It describes the first trials that Avraham and Sarah face after arriving in Canaan. When heavy famine forces them to leave Israel, they travel to Egypt. On the way, Avraham realizes that Sarah's beauty is a threat to his life, as the Egyptians will have no qualms about killing him in order to marry her. He thus requests that she pass herself off as his sister so that he will be saved. Almost every single line of the story raises questions regarding the propriety of Avram's conduct. First of all, should Avram have left the land so recently promised to him by Hashem? Or should he trusted in God and stayed put in Israel? Second, was it proper to go to Egypt if doing so would endanger Sarah? How could Avram try to save his own life by suggesting that Sarah present herself as available, given the possibility that that meant that she would be taken by the Egyptians? In asking Sarah to do this, he tells her, pass yourself off as my sister, v'chaita nafshi biglalech, and I will live because of you, leman yitavli ba'avarech, so that it will be good for me because of you. This last phrase, leman yitavli ba'avarech, is almost identical to the words used when Paro later enriches Avraham. There the pasuk says, Ula Avraham hitiv ba'avura. Did Avraham actually suggest that Sarah endanger her honor so that he could benefit from material gifts? Finally, the entire fact that he asks Sarah to pass herself off as his sister makes us wonder, is lying allowed in such circumstances? Did it not put an obstacle in front of the Egyptians, leading them to sin? And if Paro acted innocently and he truly believed that Sarah was not married, well, then why was he punished by Hashem? Finally, why choose this tactic as opposed to, if you wanted to present her as available, just saying that you're not related at all? So how do commentators address these issues? How do we understand Avraham's actions in leaving Israel to go to Egypt and endangering Sarah? How are we supposed to evaluate him in this story? Perhaps not surprisingly, the vast majority of commentators, hesitant to view Avram's first actions negatively, attempt to justify his behavior. We, however, will start by looking at the minority who actually find him at fault. Ramban, is his understanding of this parsha, tells us, V'da ki Avraham Avinu chata chit gadol bishkaga shehevi ishto hatzadeket b'mechshol avon mipnei pachado pen yehoguhu. Ramban says explicitly, you should know Avram sinned a great sin, though accidental, in bringing his righteous wife into an obstacle of sin, meaning the potential that she will be taken by the Egyptians, because of his fear lest he be killed. He should have instead had confidence that Hashem would save him. Because God has the power to help. He says, and even the fact that he left Israel the place that God had commanded him to go to, Avon Asher Chata, that too was a sin that he sinned. Ki Elokim Bara'av Yiftanu Mimavet. Again, because he should have trusted in God that he would be saved from famine. So Ramban is somewhat unique, not totally unique, but in a minority of people who say, no, actually, I'm not going to try to defend Avraham in this story. Avraham sinned in this story. Our avot and imahot were not perfect. Sometimes they made mistakes. Sometimes they did something wrong. And this is a case in point. For Ramban, Avraham's error lay in not believing enough in God to save him and acting on his own instead. He thinks that Avraham should have done two things differently. First of all, he should never have left Israel. If God had just promised him this land, that's the place he was supposed to be. In leaving Israel itself, Avram did his first sin. Secondly, he says, in so doing, Avram ended up endangering Sarah, and that in itself, in addition, was extremely wrong. Ramban doesn't end there, but he tells us actually that Avraham was even punished for this. Al ha-ma'aseh hazeh nigzar al zar'o ha-galut be'eretz Mitzrayim bi'ad paro. He says, because of this deed, Avram wasn't just a little bit punished. The entire enslavement of Egypt was a punishment for Avraham for his actions. And Ramban points out that there's many similarities and parallels between the story of Avraham in Egypt right now in our chapter and B'nai Israel in Egypt later on. He points out some of these similarities, and what I'm reading from is now not his Perusha la Torah, but his Drashat Torah Tashem Tmima, where he says, Al kein nigzar lav sheishtabdu banav dala meot shana. Because of this, it was decreed that his sons would be enslaved for 400 years. And then he shows the parallels. Kasher ba'al yado binyan ra'av, kein banav yardu sham b'ra'av. He says, just like Avraham went to Egypt because of famine, so too later on, B'nai Yisrael find themselves in Egypt because of famine, the famine in the time of the story of Yosef and his brothers. The kasher nalkacha derech srara l'chavod, dechtiv v'yalu otal paro, kin ba'u banav sham b'chavod. He says, just like when Paro takes Sarah, he does so from a position of honor and in a way of honoring her, as it says in the verse, and they praised her before Paro. He says, so too, when we went down to Egypt, we too came there derech kavod. It's not that we got to Egypt and were immediately enslaved. Enslavement comes only after we were first glorified, with Yosef rising to second in power and all of B'nai Israel living in the best of the land. He says, another parallel one can find in the punishment. When Paro is punished here, it tells us that he was struck with nigaim, with plagues. So too, later on, before B'nai Israel leave Egypt, the Egyptians are struck with plagues. He continues on and he says,
when it's time for Avraham to leave Egypt, Paro sends men to accompany him. He says, so too, when we left Egypt, the nation pushed us out, meaning the nation of the Egyptians pushed us out. And finally, kasher yatzav Avraham bechasef ubezahav, Avraham leaves Egypt with many gifts of gold and silver.
He says, so too, when B'nai Israel left Egypt, we left with much gold and silver. And he concludes, Hinei ma'asa Avraham kulo remez v'siman legalut rishon. He tells us, this event that occurred to Avraham is all a sign and a hint to the first galut, to the first exile in Egypt. So Ramban reads our story and says, yes, it's possible to read our avot and our imahot. Sometimes our ancestors simply mess up. Avram did something wrong. He should have had more faith in God and stayed put in Israel rather than leave the land promised to him by God and put his wife in danger. And he says, and as a result, he was punished severely with all of his descendants having to go to Egypt and to some extent relive what Avraham did the first time around. So Ramban, on one hand, I think, is in some ways refreshing in the sense that he has no problem saying that people are human and people make mistakes.
Whether or not one can say that what happened in Egypt is a punishment for Avraham is slightly more difficult, because if Avraham sinned, perhaps it should have been Avraham himself who is punished, not his later descendants. Nonetheless, Ramban is, I think, somewhat convincing in seeing all of those parallels. So let's move from Ramban and from this first position, who suggests that it's okay to find fault with Aravot, to the majority of commentators who are quite more hesitant to say that. And so we move into a group of commentators who suggest that Avram knowingly endangered Sarah's honor, but nonetheless this was justified due to his desire to save his own life. So Rabag stands at odds with Ramban on every single point he makes. Whereas Ramban said he shouldn't have left Egypt because of famine, Rabag says, no, not only should he not have left Egypt, this is an action of Avram that we should learn to emulate. He says, HaToelet HaRishon, in looking at what messages one can learn from our story, Rabag says, the first message we can learn from our story, Hu HaChavitzut HaBakashat HaHechrechi LaAdam LaHamadat Gufo Mehem Mizonot U'ma Sheid Melehem. He says, we should learn from Avram the diligence of what you have to do in order to survive physically when something is wrong pertaining to food, for example. And he says, "Halo tereh she'Avram im shekfar hivticho Hashem b'hatzlachat kinyanav." He says, Avram, despite the fact that Hashem had promised him that he would be successful, hit aver mipnei ha'ra'av she'ya be'eretz k'nan alecha le'eretz Mitzrayim. Nonetheless, he decided to leave when famine came, to go from Eretz Canaan to Egypt. And he didn't prevent himself from doing so just because God had promised him the land of Canaan. He says, because God's mitzvot were not given to us so that we should die because of them, but rather to do good for us. So in direct opposition to Ramban, Rabag says, the fact that Avram left the land when there was a famine doesn't show a lack of faith. Rabbah says, in modern terms, we might say, "Ein somchim al hanes." We don't rely on a miracle. If you see that there's a danger, of course you should leave to go and protect yourself and to best help you survive. And he says, leaving to Egypt was something that we should find positive about Avram, something that we might want to emulate. Moving to his actions with Sarah, he says, you should know that Avram's actions with regard to Sarah were not a sin. Because he says, even though Sarah will be taken, she will be forced, and thus she herself will not have done anything wrong. He says, and if Avraham had decided to stay put in Canaan so that he wouldn't endanger his wife when they got to Egypt, he says, there was almost definite possibility that you would die from famine on one hand, whereas there was a doubt about what would happen to Sarah in the other. And he says, that would have been a chasidut shel shtut. That would have been an idiocy to go and stay put where you have almost definite death by famine in order to go and potentially protect Sarah from something that might happen to her. Rabag is somewhat consistent in this idea that sometimes if you're given two bad options, that you have to look for what is the least of the two evils. And in Rabag's understanding, death is worse than rape. And so for sure, if you have to choose between those two horrible options, we're going to go and try to protect someone from death, even if it means potentially endangering someone that they might be taken and raped. One might question, if anyone that's familiar with the Gemara that says, "Ein lecha davar she'omed b'fnei pikuach nefesh chutz me'avodah zarah v'gilui areyot u'shfichut damim." The Gemara equates the big three sins of idolatry, sexual relations, and killing, and says that actually you can't save yourself if it means that someone is going to either have to do avodah zarah or have improper sexual relations, etc., which would sound like the Gemara would disagree with Rabag and say that actually, no, it's not true that you could decide that your life is more important than Sarah's potential raped. though I think that someone could potentially hear Rabag and say, well, the truth is, if I have to choose between these two options, these two horrible options, well, at least in one case, we're both alive. Abarnel goes in a similar direction, but I think one that's a little bit more satisfying to most of us. He says, "Ein safik shera'u le'me'ula she'yivchar ha'mavet yoter me'asato ha'nevala." He says, the truth is, if one has a choice, one really should choose death rather than having this horrible abomination done. Aval. Im lo timana ha'nevala im ha'mavet. But what happens if you're in a situation where your death is actually not going to prevent the abomination from happening? Then, ein ra'ui she'yivchar ba'mavet. Then, it's not true that you should choose death. Abarbanel is suggesting once they got to Egypt and Avram sees that he might be killed and his wife be taken, then Avraham has to choose between the two things. But they're not even, because what does Avraham know? If I am killed, what will happen nonetheless? Nonetheless, and Dafka, because I'm being killed, my wife is going to be taken. And so it doesn't help me to go and forfeit my life and say, okay, well, kill me, because she's going to be taken anyway. And Abarbanel says, if that's the situation, well, then what's the point of forfeiting your life? And if anything, being alive gives you at least the potential to help and protect Sarah in a way, of course, which you can't do if you're no longer here. With that, I want to move to one last approach. This approach goes a bit further than the second in trying to justify Avram and says, Avraham didn't actually try to endanger Sarah at all. It's not that he endangered her, but was justified in doing so. Avraham had tried to create a situation in which both he and Sarah could come out unscathed, where nothing would happen to him and nothing would happen to Sarah. This approach is taken by Rashi and later by others in a more perhaps complex way. Rashi says simply that Avraham tried to hide Sarah. Okay, this is based on a famous midrash that when Avram comes into Egypt, he puts Sarah in a box so that they would never be able to find her. Unfortunately for him, they open the box at customs and she's found out. Rashi doesn't deal with, well, did he not have a different alternative afterwards? Presumably assuming that once she was known there, they just didn't have any choices. In some ways, Rashi is not pshat at all. It's very hard to see how you get this in the psukim. He's picking up on the singular language of Vayhi kevo Avraham etzraima. Avram came in singular to Egypt, and the question of, well, then where was Sarah? So he says, because Sarah was in the box. At the same time, the idea behind Rashi, I think, is an important one. Rashi's saying, no, Avram didn't go blindly in, hoping that everything will be for the best. Did not go blindly in saying, oh, save me so that, and even if that means that you all be taken. Avram originally tried to think of a way in which both he and Sarah could go into this and emerge without a problem. Jubilees goes in a very similar direction to Rashi, suggesting that Jubilees allows us to go in a similar direction to Rashi, suggesting something that I think is interesting. He says, Avram went into Egypt in the third year of the week, and he dwelt in Egypt 5 years before his wife was torn away from him. Jubilees points out something that we don't often think about. We don't know how long Avraham was in Egypt for. Jubilees posits they were actually there for 5 full years before Sarah was taken, which if one takes Rashi's approach in a slightly different form, where you say that somehow Avram was actually trying to hide Sarah, Jubilees allows for the fact that actually it wasn't such a bad idea because it worked. For 5 years, he actually did manage to hide Sarah and nothing happened to her. I think, though, that there's an answer that the Ran, Rabbeinu Nisim, presents, which is, I think, a little bit more grounded in the text. And we feel that could actually perhaps have really been a viable option that Avram was thinking about. The Ran suggests that Avram must have had a plan. He says, there's no way that Avram came in here thinking that this was going to be okay. He must have had some idea and had a reason for trying to pass Sarah off as his sister. So he starts by combating Ramban and saying, I'm surprised at Ramban for saying that Avraham sinned. Why? He says, because So the Ran asks a very interesting question on Ramban. He says, Ramban, if Avram sins in this story, why is it that a couple of stories later, in our chapters, if we continue reading the stories, he does the same exact thing with Sarah when they get to the Philistine lands? So later on, when there's again a famine, Avram goes to the Philistine lands, and he again tries to pass off his sister as his wife as his sister, but nonetheless she is taken. And the Ramban says, and the Ran asks on Ramban, if this had been a sin, and Avram had done something so terrible that he actually was told in Brit Bein HaBitarim that his children were going to be enslaved, how is it possible that he would nonetheless do the same exact thing again? And so the Ran says, it must mean that Avram actually had a plan, and even though it didn't work, it was, in theory at least, a good plan. So what was it? He says, he says, therefore, I think that Avram actually must have been thinking something very proper. He says, what was Avram's plan? He passed off Sarah as his sister, because in the time of Tanakh, a brother often was the one who would negotiate the dowry of another. And what Avram was thinking was that if someone came and said that they want to take Sarah as a wife, they wouldn't kill Avram because Avram is just the brother, but rather they would do this in the normal way that anyone who wants to go and take somebody else in marriage does so, by negotiating a dowry. And what Avram was thinking was that he would ask for such a large dowry that no one would be able to meet it. And he says, he would at least know in advance what was potentially happening. And if there was a problem, they can at least leave and run away before anything happens. But he simply assumed that everybody would come. He asked for such a large amount, the guy would have to go back home and think about it. Somebody else would come in the meantime, and he'd be able to push them all off until there was no more famine. They could collect their food and go back to Israel. So why didn't it work? He says, Va'avraham lo haya choshev she'hamelach yikachana li'isha. Right? He says, Avram never in a million years thought that out of all the people who would want to come to get Sarah, it would be the king. Because the king was the one person whom Avram couldn't push off, whom Avram couldn't ask for this dowry and that dowry and the other thing. The king could meet anything he requested. And that was the only reason that it didn't work. So what we've seen in this little short exploration is different approaches to this general issue in our story in particular. In general, I think that just like in our case, the majority of commentators look to justify our avot when they seem not to be doing something that meets our perhaps moral standards or what we would expect of them. Most commentators try to reread the story in a way in which the av or ima, the forefather or the foremother, is somehow justified. Depending on the story, that justification will be slightly different. In our case, commentators try to figure out why, even though you might think that Avram was not justified in what he did, he nonetheless was, or try to come up creatively and try to give us an insight into, well, what was Avram thinking? On the other hand, just like in our story, Ramban says, well, actually, maybe Avram was wrong. So too in other stories, sometimes Ramban, sometimes a different commentator, will say, well, actually, no, in this story, the Av or Ima was at fault. So I hope that as you continue reading the stories of Sefer Bereishit, you try to evaluate each time that you come to a story where you're not sure how to read our Avot and Imahot. Try to think, is this a story in which I should try to justify him or her? Or is this a story where I can actually say, no, this was a simple mistake in judgment. People aren't perfect. And what we're supposed to learn from our Avot and Imahot isn't just to have a role model that's an angel, but also a role model whom we can learn from, because sometimes they make mistakes just like us. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Nima. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.